Welcome to the program for Thursday, September 20th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today it's Industry Chatter, as we do every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. And my guest today on the program is Anthony Robbins, Vice President of Federal for Brocade. Anthony, great to have you in the studio.
Thanks for being here today. Glad to be here with you.
Let's start by talking about what you do for clients in the federal space, please.
Well, there's a couple of things that we do primarily. One, Brocade is known for our position in the marketplace with respect to SAN technology. So in that case, we're in everybody's biggest data centers, and we help them manage large, complex data. Big topic, especially in the federal marketplace today. The second thing that we do is we provide network infrastructure solutions through our acquisition of Foundry about 4 years ago. So we're in a data center supporting the big data challenges of today, and we're providing capability and capacity via network infrastructure products.
What do agencies ask you the most about when you go to talk to them about big data?
Well, there's a couple of things. The amount of data that the federal government is creating in particular is just enormous. You know, not only is the federal government considered the largest consumer of information technology worldwide as a segment, they are also the largest creator of data. And the thing that's happening today is as they are creating massive amounts of data like never before, they're also consolidating data centers. So they're worrying about how to move large amounts of data, how to store it, access, retrieve, and the like.
As agencies start to try to wrap their arms around big data, one of the things that I hear consistently is they're still at the point of trying to understand the possibilities of just what all is in the information that they have. What are some of the ways that you're seeing agencies being able to unwrap that to say, all right, I understand now that I can do this task and this task and this task and find this information and this information and this information among this huge sea of stuff that we've had all along but didn't know how to sort through before?
Yeah, so we've had it all along. We haven't been able to sort through it, and now we're getting more and more every day, and we're still trying to figure out how to sort through that to get valuable information that can be actioned. And then combine that with all the massive amounts of video data that's being assembled as well. So what I think customers are doing for the most part today is they're using software tools and analytics to try to get to that. So they're trying to come up with ways to be smart and mine that massive amounts of data where it wasn't too long ago where they tried to do that with analysts sitting in front of workstations and large computers. So
Is the process of automating this data analysis getting better, faster, cheaper, any of those?
It is. In part, the cost of spinning disk is dropping dramatically. So the storage solutions today are getting more robust and more complete. And the overall cost, just like, you know, whether it's Moore's Law or the cost of the commodity computing. So it's dropping. But the complexity around the big data thing is increasing. So cost is decreasing, the complexity about how to mine the data is more complex today than yesterday, the massive amounts of data. And then, you know, when you think about some of the things that are happening inside the federal government, so when, you know, if they want to close 800 data centers or 1,100 data centers, neither which are anywhere near commercial best practices, right? So as they want to collapse a large number of data centers and have a smaller net number of data centers, the access to the information that people want is more than they ever had when there was a large number more of data centers, right? So availability of applications data at any time, anywhere on the network. So they want data center-like capability way out at the edge of the network. They want it globally. They want it available all the time and the like. So there's a huge challenge as it relates to management of the big data. And then for us, the way that we try to contribute to that is all of those things, data center consolidation, and we'll talk about cloud for sure, and this big data problem, all put a massive amount of pressure on the network. You know, and what I share with our customers is, you know, the network that's in place to serve the federal government today was largely conceived 20 years ago. It was implemented, you know, anywhere from 5 to 15 years ago. And today it's largely full of products that are either obsolete, no longer sold by manufacturers, or in many cases, in the case of the DoD, no longer certified. And so as that has happened, you know, so there's a major opportunity to refresh and recapitalize the government's network infrastructure, and we're also trying to serve that business problem.
Now, you talked about something a moment ago that I think is particularly interesting. You talk about the concept of different kinds of data. And as I'm learning more about big data, I'm getting I'm understanding that data, what we think of as data today, is not what we thought of as data 5 years ago or even a year ago, maybe. You mentioned video data. And I guess my stereotype of data is all the fields in a spreadsheet or all the words that are typed into a document and those kinds of things, or information that's collected through a website, all those kinds of things, and collecting all of that and sifting through it. What are some other kinds of data that needs to be collated, sifted through, tagged, whatever, that don't fit into those normal kinds of stereotypes about what data is?
Yeah, so it's, you're right. It's really complex. And so, you know, the numbers are there's something like 30 or 40,000 websites that are hosted by the federal government, right? And more than 2.5 million people in the federal government, an IT spend of more than $80 billion a year for more than 10,000 systems. So there is just a massive amount of data. So trying to figure out how those things, how the data comes together inter and intra-agency, or is kind of one set of challenges. And that's a lot relative to business systems. Then the other thing is the way we fight wars today is dramatically different. So the ISR, you know, problem. So the way that we collect, you know, we collect massive amounts of data in support of warfighters, where they have air-breathing assets that collect massive amounts of data. So, you know, so the business systems and the voice, data, video piece that comes together, it's an enormous amount of data that's out there.
What are the things that agencies should maybe have on their radar screens, on their landscape, maybe not today, that they need to know about big data? Maybe they're not ready to take a particular step or two today, but is something that they should be thinking about and preparing for in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's all driven by the user, right? So if you're in civilian agencies, you have a different amount of data that you're trying to access or use. Same with the warfighters and the like. And so for us, it's how do you provide citizen services or support for the warfighter. And as Brocade thinks about that problem, we think about improving or increasing network capability so that larger amounts of data can flow across the network. Today, the government's network, as I referenced earlier, was put in place a long time ago. It was based on products and architectures that were available then, and as a result, it's too complex. So the government's network is too complex, and the number one issue relative to network downtime is still human error. So we're trying to create a set of products that take complexity out of the network and improve capability and capacity. And as we do that, larger amounts of data can flow based on the customer's applications, whether you're on the citizen services, civilian side, or the DoD side as it relates to the warfighter.
Now, implicit in all of this is that we're thinking about all of these issues in a time when a money squeeze is on, essentially. I don't think anybody would dispute your argument for increasing the robustness of the federal networks, but how do you demonstrate an ROI on that at a time like we're in right now?
Yeah, and that's one of my favorite questions, right? Because it's we're talking about taxpayer dollars here, right? And so over the last decade, right, the federal government has spent more than $500 billion on information technology. So I, as a business leader, I've always said it is not about the money. And even if there's budget challenges today, whether it's going to go down a percentage point or three, or in the case of the DoD budget, you know, it's going to go down $500 billion over the next 10 years. So my view is that the government spends so much money, it's not about the money, but it is very much about how agencies work together, right? And how they do things differently tomorrow versus how they did things today. And that's so cloud, you know, talks to that. The federal government's strategy on shared services talks to that. And so, you know, as I have spoken on either different panels or with different groups, you know, it's not about money, but it's about leadership. And it's not just about leadership. It's about change leaders and change leadership. And so if the federal government, you know, as a $2.6 million person enterprise with, you know, $80 billion a year in IT spend, we're going to go out and get, you know, commercial consulting on how to do business process reengineering. They would go get, you know, the smartest people in the world to come in and address questions that were not really related to what they're doing today, you know, and then they would reengineer their business. They would, you know, because the business of government is very complex. It's very decentralized. There's lots of stovepipes. And until you get at that, you don't really get at the true cost savings that are available.
I want to follow up when we come back on something that you said that I think really gets to the crux of the issues that a lot of agencies are dealing with, the concept of how agencies do things differently tomorrow than they're doing them today. Let's talk about that when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Anthony Robbins of Brocade's my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue in just a moment.
Making dollars and cents out of data center consolidation. A panel discussion with experts from government, sponsored by Brocade. Panelists Zach Baldwin, Cloud Computing Program Manager at GSA.
In the initiative over the 2 years, I think the biggest barrier is to really do data center consolidation, you have to successfully deliver enterprise services from a centralized location. Culturally, people don't like to give up control. They want to see the blinking lights. They think they can do it better and cheaper. Which they're not capturing the fully loaded cost of some of these rogue data centers.
Right.
But also it's been institutionalized by the way the budget's done.
Meet the future head on. Brocade's networking solutions provide government agencies with the high performance, reliability, and flexibility they need to securely deliver mission-critical services while maximizing taxpayer dollars. To hear the panel making dollars and cents out of data center consolidation in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, search data center.
Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
The year was 1960. The month was May. The Cold War was heating up. And Kelly Johnson had just received a phone call from Washington and an assignment that would challenge his Skunk Works team as never before. To design and build an aircraft that couldn't be shot down. That could fly higher and faster than any other. That could carry cameras so sophisticated you could see the paint stripes on a parking lot from 90,000 feet. And the delivery deadline? 20 months. In other words, President Eisenhower wanted the impossible. And that's just what the Lockheed team delivered. The SR-71 Blackbird was and remains the world's fastest, highest-flying manned aircraft. A tribute to a group of people for whom the word impossible did not exist. And never will. See their story and others unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the departments of defense and state. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. Whoever wins, you'll get a new or updated administration. In our conclusion to our week-long multimedia series, The Obama Impact, Evaluating the Last 4 Years, we look at transition. We'll talk to the godmother of presidential transitions and the likely priorities for a second Obama administration. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter with Anthony Robbins of Brocade. And you mentioned, Anthony, in the last part of our conversation, that one of the things that you're thinking about and working with agencies on is how they're going to do things differently tomorrow than they're doing things today. We talked during the break a little bit about the fact that that doesn't just apply to the technology. It doesn't just apply to the things that agencies are doing themselves. It also applies to the way they go about doing those things, the way they go about acquiring the technology that they need and so on. What are some of the trends that you see there? What are some of the agencies that you see that are doing a good job? What are some of their best practices?
Yeah, so the business of government, as you know so well, is very complex, and the amount of money that they spend to conduct the business of government is an enormous – there's an enormous amount of money that gets spent. And so what we'll find is, you know, people, the government has to go to cloud, and they're on their way, and they moved email, and they've moved some number of smaller applications, and they're working on that. But statistics, right? Last year, the VC firms in one study spent more than $8 billion funding companies that were delivering cloud solutions. $8 billion last year. There's another report that says by the year 2020, the IT market is going to spend more than $200 billion annually on cloud-like capabilities for IT infrastructure. And so if the VCs are spending all their money right there, and then the companies like us, Brocade and many others, you know, see massive growth in the IT marketplace, which is we're in a mature marketplace. So where the areas of growth are is around cloud. So what happens when those dynamics come together is that's where people spend their money. And so if you have infrastructure that's not related to that direction, the cost of your infrastructure becomes more expensive. So the federal government, whether you're in the intelligence community, Department of Defense, or civilian agencies, they've got to get cloud-centric, and they've got to drive shared services. So as they do that, right, they've got to manage the profile of their funding. And so, like, there's a lot of things around capital expenses, which largely get used today for big IT projects, versus operational expenses, which, you know, get used to consume services in a fiscal year, as well as the acquisition vehicles that they use, right, versus what they used to use when they acquired IT systems versus what they might use from acquisition standpoint to acquire cloud-like services. So the acquisition strategy, the way that they spend their money, you know, and getting everything into the cloud are really important change things that are happening in the marketplace.
What is the biggest roadblock to shared services at agencies, the procedures and policies that are in place, or is it a mindset, is it a worldview of this is so weird, this is so different than how we've done it before, that it's hard for us to turn the battleship and get going in a different direction?
Yeah, that's a fair point, right? It's a good question, because it's just like any, like, adoption curve, right? You have the early majority or the first movers, and, you know, and they usually have harder work in changing and transforming organizations. And the federal government is full of those people that, you know, are in positions where they could take a little bit more risk, or they have money and they can challenge themselves and their organizations. But, you know, I've worked in commercial companies that struggled with providing their services, you know, like the products, whether it's hardware, software, networking, infrastructure products, to provide it as a service. So I know I worked for a company when I was responding to DISA's contract back in 2006 when they were trying to stand up their shared services agreement. It took us a long time to figure out how to really model our pricing to serve this community. And I think that's really important that we as a vendor community are really in touch with our customers so that we know what their mission responsibilities are, what their business challenges are, so we can craft products and solutions that fit. So I know in the case of DISA, it took us a long time to figure it out, and now DISA's doing quite well, frankly, with their shared services contract.
How do you think the vendor community as a whole is doing? I'm not going to ask you to criticize yourself or pick on somebody else, but how do you think you're doing on the whole at responding to that?
Not very well. Not very well. And that's as a whole. I mean, I think some companies are doing a fantastic job. You know, GSA has led a set of contracts to go point at the cloud and shared services, and some agencies have done that. But it's getting, because you have to remember, right, for 30 years that or 40 years that this IT business has been in place, we sold hardware, software, products, and then we started selling solutions, which were based on hardware and software products. And then now today, the government, as is the commercial marketplace, they're saying, okay, now sell to us as a service. And I want 3 nines or 4 nines or 5 nines. And, you know, here's how I want to acquire that. And, you know, so there's a lot of challenges, both for the government to define what the requirements are and to figure out an acquisition strategy and to fund it, right, in this time of uncertainty. And those similar challenges exist in the commercial marketplace. Like, what are the acquisition, you know, how do they price that versus, the business model that they're in so far, and how do you rationalize that? So there's a lot of work on both sides of the fence.
If there's been one consistent theme that I've heard about selling services to the government over the past, say, 6 months to 2 years, it's been what you just touched on, and that is, how do you price it and how do you get the acquisition shop to understand that this is how we're probably going to be doing just about everything from now on? We're out of the business of buying 10,000 boxes and plugging them in, and that's not how we do it anymore. Are you seeing the acquisition shops making progress in getting that? And what does that look like in your view?
Well, if I look at our own business, you know, most of our business is still transacted today, similar to how it was transacted yesterday. And a part of this year's business or last year's business, it was based on how we worked with our customers over the last 3 to 5 years. So I think the profile of our business will change, you know, next year and 2 to 5 years from now, where it'll be much more oriented to this shared services model. Mm-hmm. So I think we're like in the middle of this change coming. What's happening today, I see a lot is the discussions by the CIOs, the intent and the desire and the framework for how you might do something versus exactly how we are doing something. Because if I were to go in and analyze like the federal government's budget, you know, relative to hardware, software, networking, storage products, I still think today the vast majority of them are being bought as they were a couple years ago, you know, so.
Is the fact that the agency CIOs are starting to think differently, though, is that a good sign in your view?
Yeah, it is. Because it takes, you mentioned earlier, the government is a really big enterprise, and there's hundreds of agencies, there's lots of stovepipe, there's a lot of money, there's concerns around, you know, acquisition integrity, data integrity, security as it relates to, so it's a very complex enterprise, and so it's very risk adverse, right? And you know, and then you know, we touched on a couple times the whole money situation. So you know, as a leader, I think there's plenty of money. The government spends plenty of money, but it's how they spend it, you know, and how can they consolidate it, and how can they do things differently, you know, that are important to, you know, big change initiatives.
Do you foresee a potential event or situation or challenge that will push agencies maybe a little faster in that direction in going the way that you're talking about being more comfortable and more adaptable to shared services and acquiring these things in a different way?
I do. And it's this, it has been a while since the IT market has faced kind of explosive growth opportunities that the cloud or shared services model creates for the IT segment. So it's been a while. As I mentioned earlier, the IT segment is largely been considered a mature marketplace. And in a mature marketplace, lots of mergers and acquisitions happen, and you've seen that, right, on the Beltway and in the commercial space and globally. Lots of that's happening. So all of a sudden, here comes this cloud thing, and the amount of money that VCs are putting into it and the forecasted projections for growth are indicating that that's where companies are going to invest, period. You know, and so the cost of the federal government's infrastructure today, which, you know, if you think about, they spent $500 billion, $500 billion over the last decade. The cost of that infrastructure is going to get more expensive, you know, annually as we go forward if people don't get into the cloud, you know, and get into this shared services or share first, or as the government likes to refer to, their future enterprise architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So the compelling event is the dynamics that are happening around shared services, largely being driven by cloud, which was largely driven by virtualization. So that's a compelling event that's happening, on top of which, you know, the government having to, you know, potentially get, you know, less money next year for IT and less money annually for the next decade. So they have less money. The commercial marketplace is going in a certain direction. And if the government doesn't connect to it, they'll kind of get left behind. And the cost of being left behind is more risk and more expense. And so what we encourage, you know, as we architect the network or the data center of the future for our customers, we always talk to them about, you know, don't necessarily define what can't be done and what the risk is. Define how you get there, because there's enough challenges, like, you know, like security. In the case of cloud, everyone's, you know, primary challenge is what happens to security. How secure is my data? Is my data on U.S. soil? Is it OCONUS? You know, and so people get really wrapped around, you know, what the security mechanism looks like, and then they don't make forward progress relative to what they can move to the cloud. And our view is get everything cloud ready and cloud enabled, your architecture, your applications, you know, get rid of proprietary protocols and just kind of get there faster, because as the government gets there, progress is being made daily on the security policies and practices in federal government and commercial world and globally, because the world's going there.
Mm-hmm.
So
we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, though, I want to go back to something that we talked about at the beginning of the program, and that is data centers and the situation with the efforts to consolidate them. My guest is Anthony Robbins. He's Vice President of Federal for Brocade, and we'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This week's Experts in Health topic is Asthma Health, featuring Dr. Patricia McNally, an allergy and immunology physician with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Springfield Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. McNally. Asthma is an inflammation of the airway that is typically triggered by an allergy or irritant-causing substance, such as pollen, dust, mold, and tobacco smoke. The severity of the inflammation varies by individual, but can range from coughing and wheezing to severe shortness of breath. To reduce the likelihood of an asthmatic episode, actively work to limit exposure to triggers, especially tobacco smoke. Studies show that secondhand smoke is a risk factor for new cases of asthma in preschool children.
Dr. McNally was recently recognized as a top doctor in Northern Virginia Magazine. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's neither one, but a hero just the same. It's a federal worker giving to United Way of the National Capital Area and its charities. She pulls someone out of harm's way with every payroll contribution. He champions the people in his community with every CFC charity he designates. When you choose CFC code 31408 and give through payroll contributions, you're changing the life of someone in need. Amazing things happen when we stand united.
The nation's largest intelligence event returns to Orlando, Florida, October 8th through 11th. USGIF's GEOINT 2012 Symposium features speakers from the defense, intelligence, and homeland security communities, as well as panel discussions and breakout tracks tackling the critical issues affecting our national security. Network with professionals and uncover new technologies from more than 250 organizations. Register and learn more at GEOINT2012.com. That's GEOINT2012.com.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
The Cloud First Report, presented by the cloud computing experts at GTSI and HP.
The Army and the Defense Information Systems Agency have reached a major milestone in their transition to a cloud-based email system. The Army now has 500,000 users on the system. Thousands of other users from the military's Joint Staff and U.S. European Command have migrated into the DISA private cloud as well. Officials say the work they've done so far will set the stage for other enterprise services like SharePoint, centrally managed secure mobile devices, and records management capabilities.
Public, private, hybrid? The options for moving to the cloud are many, and mandated transition deadlines are right around the corner. Industry leaders GTSI and HP have established a cloud center of excellence in Herndon, Virginia, specifically focused on navigating the cloud options available to agencies and to help you decide on what approach is best for your requirements. Get your head in the cloud. Contact a GTSI HP cloud computing expert and reap the benefits of increased operational efficiency and decreased program costs. Email HPCCOE at GTSI.com today.
Join senior government leaders from HHS, CMS, DOD, and VA at FCA Bethesda's 5th Health IT Day on October 18th at the Bethesda North Marriott. Program sessions will discuss electronic health records, shared services, big data mobility, and more. Register today at fcabethesda.org/healthitday. FCA Bethesda thanks its sponsors, Accenture, DRC, General Dynamics, ICF International, Intel, Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, Northrop Grumman, and SAS.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter today, and my guest on the program is Anthony Robbins. He's Vice President of Federal for Brocade. And one of the things that we talked about earlier in the conversation, Anthony, is data center consolidation. And you said something in that part of the conversation that I wanted to follow up on. The numbers that we have, the numbers that we work with, indicate that there are about 2,400 data centers, and conversations revolve around that number, how accurate it is. But that's the number that we kind of start these conversations with normally. And the federal government has said, OMB has said, we want to cut a substantial number of those over the next couple of years. As you look at that goal and you look at the result that we will see and you look at the demand in the marketplace for information and what's stored in those data centers, what do you see holistically as a chain of events that may present itself and how that compares to a chain of events that might be the best possible outcome for government?
Okay. So the number 2,400 data centers, you know, you're right. And I think you framed it as well that said it could be more, could be less. You know, there is a school of thought out there that says it could be considerably more. And so I think there was really great work done by the government to kind of go out there and try to do, you know, an internal assessment of how many data centers do they have or do we have in the federal government, and then what are our opportunities? And so there are some really good goals and milestones and metrics put in place to draw them down. And frankly, and then to challenge the federal government, I haven't really seen a data center consolidation plan yet that gets anywhere close to commercial best practices.
What are the differences between the data consolidation plans you're seeing in government and commercial best practices, as you refer to?
So the amount of data centers, you know, so again, if I just look at the government as a whole, 2.6 million employees, you know, 300 agencies, you know, and $80 billion of IT spend, you know, and more than 2,400 data centers. It's vast. It's way too many. And so, you know, if the federal government came out and said, we have 2,400 data centers to support all of these agencies and the business of government, and we're going to go through a consolidation project that gets the data centers down below 500 total data centers to support the federal government globally, I think that's a much better number. Right. And today, whether their announced intent is to cut 800, and there's some reports that say their announced intent is to cut 1100, right? There's still the net result is still they're materially off of commercial best practices. Most commercial companies are going down to like single digit data centers, like 4, 6, 8, 9 single digit data centers to support very large, very complex global enterprises. And so I think there's still a huge opportunity for government in that area.
One difference is, though, that a company doesn't have the same pressure from, say, members of Congress to don't close a data center in my district. I want to keep that thing open because I want to keep those jobs.
There's no doubt that there's that. That we talked a lot about security. We talked a lot about the application differences between citizen services, you know, or support for the warfighter, you know, and then there's the whole public, private, hybrid cloud. So, you know, as we've said many times, you know, the business of government is very complex. And that's, you know, I circle back to, you know, a couple of times you and I have mentioned here today that not only is it complex, but there's a lot of money that's being spent. And the challenge, I think, is a lot around how the governments work together intra and interagency and how they work on shared services models, how they get cloud enabled, and addressing a lot of that is about leadership, and in particular leaders who are really keen on change leadership. Really important.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back, and maybe what you think some of the pressure points are and what some leaders could do to try to remove those pressure points and really free up the ability of agencies to work together on some of these issues. Anthony Robbins of Brocade's my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
What about this? What about this? What about this?
Force 3 presents the world's most obsessive engineers. Today, it's John Kim.
Right now, I'm obsessing over how corporate networks can securely support BYOD, bring your own device. I'm thinking about it night and day. One minute, I'll be thinking about, like, my sandwich. And suddenly, I'm obsessing about how Force 3 can help iPad and smartphone users be on your network and take full advantage of voice, video, and all your business applications in a secure and reliable way. Force 3 teams with Cisco, Citrix, NetApp, and Apple to help you scale and deliver the performance and security you need to support BYOD. If you want to learn more, or if you just like one of our cool BYOD t-shirts, go to obsessiveengineers.com. I'm John Kim, and I obsess so you won't have to.
You can watch us obsess at obsessiveengineers.com. Force 3, let's do something great. Force 3 is a NetApp Gold partner and provides solutions and products to the federal government.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Anthony Robbins of Brocade's my guest on Industry Chatter today. You mentioned the some of the difficulties that agencies have at intra-agency operations and inter-agency cooperation when it comes to some of these issues. Talk about where some of the pressure points are that you see, and you mentioned that you believe this is a leadership challenge, where a leader might be able to go in and try to address some of those pressure points and flow, free up this flow of agencies to be able to work together in some of these shared strategies.
Yeah, so I think on the technical side of this, I think it's a lot around security. So I think when people lead with security, either what they're concerned about or what they don't think is capable, then that creates almost like an impediment to change or progress. So that's one thing. And I like to share with companies, you know, we, like many other companies in the Bay Area, have migrated our most sensitive information to Salesforce.com cloud. So our customer data has been in Salesforce.com cloud for years and years, and we care, publicly traded companies, Sarbanes-Oxley. We have a lot of risk and exposure by that, but we have it outside our own firewall. So we've done that like many companies have. So I think the whole security thing is one in which where the government's got to come together, get real clear on what the strategy is around security, and they are via FedRAMP and other initiatives, and progress has been made. But I think if the government can make more progress there in that area faster, publicize it, you know, de-risk it and the like, I think they would have more people moving. The second thing is, you know, how leaders work together. You know, if leaders will come together and focus on the challenge of enabling citizen or warfighter services by execution, by spending less money and doing more today with less and worry less about control. Right. If they worry less about control, I think they'll make forward progress. So when we talk to customers and agencies about progress, the issues that are more central to forward progress as it relates to cloud and shared services are control and security. And so if we could focus on control and security with really keen leaders, you know, who are really smart relative to change leadership, I think a tremendous amount of progress could be made on top of where the government has already done some good work.
Now, you mentioned the first of those elements, and when you talked about it, you mentioned FedRAMP when you talked about security. It sounds like from what you're saying that if FedRAMP meets the goals that the program has set out for itself, that can be potentially a game changer. If agencies are going to be able to go to these service providers, know that security is already taken care of and so on, they're certified, they meet requirements, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That has the potential to really change things.
It could be huge.
Like.
But it's still going to come back to, so the capabilities of FedRAMP, as good as that is, will still be pointed back at the agencies and the IT managers. You know, the middle management structure inside of the federal government, as I commonly refer to, will still have to believe and buy in and orient acquisitions and change their IT strategy to believe that or accept it and the like. And that still comes back to this kind of whole change leadership thing.
And that goes back to the conversation we had earlier about whether this is a technological issue or whether it's a cultural issue. And it sounds like you're telling me that it will be overwhelmingly a cultural issue, changing dynamics rather than changing what's written down on paper and this is how we do things.
Yeah, there's no doubt. So especially in speed to getting more done faster. So that'll be more cultural. The market dynamics that are happening in the marketplace today, it's going to pull the whole government and the rest of the consumers of information technology globally. It's going to pull the whole market in that direction. And so the real question is just how fast does it happen? And in the case of the government, there's really good case for it needs to happen faster than it is because, you know, the compelling challenges with, you know, what sequestration, the IT's budget, continuing resolution, and all these other mandates, whether it's cloud first, shared services, federal data center consolidation initiatives. So all these initiatives, you know, that the government has to contemplate against a potential shrinking budget and, you know, the whole conundrum of how do they invest you know, in a strategy when they're looking at having less money tomorrow than they had yesterday. That's a challenge.
When you talk about that, I think about a conversation I had with one of my colleagues the other day. I told him I was watching a cartoon with my kid, and this guy's walking a dog, and a car goes by, and the dog takes off, and this guy's hanging on to the end of the leash. And that made me think of exactly what you're talking about there, which is what is happening to the acquisition process and to the technology curve, because that guy hanging on to the leash is the agency, and technology is going to drag them whether they like it or not. And the only choice you got is to either hang on or let go.
Right. Or the train's already left the station.
Yeah, exactly.
So get on board.
I want to hit on something a little personal when we come back, Anthony. Anthony Robbins of Brocade's my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's industry chatter, and we'll wrap up our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
A trusted 8A certified firm, Unistar Sparco Computers, is an IT solution provider that offers over a million IT products and office supplies. Their experienced sales team efficiently services both CONUS and OCONUS locations. Sparco.com's past performance ranks them with the top 5% of all GSA Schedule 70 contract holders. They hold various BPAs and IDIQs as a result of personalized customer care and fast, reliable delivery. Strong partnerships with leading manufacturers enable them to provide the latest technologies with budget-sensitive pricing. They are an IBM-certified premier business partner for servers and storage solutions, and their offerings include IBM software product lines such as licensing and renewals. Because they understand your needs, they have extended their business hours to support you, their government customers. For more information, please call 1-800-840-8400 or visit sparco.com. SPARCO.com.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
Hi, I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General hosted payload program. That's spacedelivered.com.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message is brought to you by GEICO.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's industry chatter. My guest is Anthony Robbins of Brocade, and I mentioned I wanted to get a little personal to wrap up today, Anthony. You've been in the federal space for a long time. How is doing business with the government different today from your perspective than it was when you first started?
Well, from a technology standpoint, I would say that, you know, that when we were going to go to the moon – You know, there was a lot of work that the government had to put in place to advance technology to allow that to happen. And as well with the Star Wars days during the Reagan administration, you know, a lot of infrastructure was built out by the federal government to support the mission of the government. And the fundamental change that I have seen over the last decade or so was that the size or the amount of money that the commercial global industry has spent on IT has made it such that commercial companies innovate around the commercial IT spend today. And so when the government used to build it, you know, and the commercial companies would innovate for the federal government, today commercial companies innovate for the commercial marketplace, and they expect that the government will kind of get on board with that. And as that dynamic has been happening, the federal government is doing more of kind of a, you know, either following commercial best practices, attempting to follow commercial best practices, or buying commercial off the shelf product. So I would say it's more buy versus build is kind of what the fundamentally is what I've seen over the last decade or two.
Is that a good shift, do you think? Is it good for the agencies and is it good for the taxpayer?
It is. And I think, you know, there's things like, you know, DARPA still does things as it relates to advanced requirements for the Department of Defense. And there's even places, as you're aware, in the intelligence community that do things to go out and fund, you know, the development or the exploration of commercial technologies that apply. So I think the government still does some an investment or exploration around, you know, technology or breakthroughs or roadmaps that are important for the business of government. But I think to the extent that the federal government can leverage the vast R&D spend of the global commercial enterprises that are in this IT marketplace, the return on investment that they'll get, it will be huge compared to building it themselves.
Yeah, it almost seems when you talk about DARPA and ARPA-E and those kinds of organizations, it almost seems like the reverse, where some of those organizations have become the VCs for these companies to go out or nonprofits or whatever, to go out and try to come up with some of these new innovations.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And when we as a kind of a vendor community, if we serve this federal marketplace really well, you know, we'll come, you know, we'll get a really clear understanding of the requirements that the federal government has. We'll line it up really well with our value proposition or what our roadmap looks like, and then we'll serve them well, whether it's, you know, helping them relative to acquisition reform or technologies that matter, or not serve that particular base of customers. So.
I have a lot more here I'd like to cover, and I'm completely out of time, but I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thanks very much for coming in, Anthony.
Thanks for having me on the program today. I enjoyed it.
Anthony Robbins is Vice President of Federal for Brocade, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll archive this conversation at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and you can find it and listen to it anytime you like. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming up on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.